Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hot stuff.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I'm Owen Main, and joined in studio today by Brian Milne. Brian, second time on the podcast. Hey, Brian, how's it going?
Great. It's nice to be back. I like doing this format. It's been fun, so I'm glad to be back again.
It's good to have you here, Brian. Of course, from ballhype.com, ballhype.net, Meadows Interactive.
That's good.
Is that plenty for now?
Former sports writer.
Former sports writer for the Tribune.
Now wannabe sports writer and sports blogger and wannabe podcaster.
An internet guru.
There you go.
And last week, so it's been 1 week since we did a podcast. It was Andy and I sitting here, and we brought Luke in a little bit. Last week, we talked about the Lakers and the day after Mike Brown got fired, which is pretty crazy. We talked a lot about Mike Brown. Andy did his best Mike Brown impression, talked about how his mouth got sideways, and and the next day, Mike's gone. Kind of an interesting timing for us because we had just done the podcast, but a lot's gone on in the last week, of course. Brown's gone. They did the coaching search or the perceived coaching search, and Phil Jackson wasn't in the running. They hired Mike D'Antoni, who is coming off knee surgery, which is always funny when a coach is coming off surgery, I think. Like when Phil had his back surgery a couple of years ago and he's like got the big chair, mm-hmm. or his knee replacement surgery or hip replacement, or, you know, it seems like he had probably like everything replaced at some point. He's kind of the bionic coach for a couple of years there. But so tell me, do you think the Lakers made the right pick with D'Antoni over Phil Jackson and others?
I don't know. That's a tough one right off the bat. I do know. I think you guys jinxed them last week. Because everything was shaping up great for the Lakers. I guess not with the preseason they're having, but all of a sudden you guys had the podcast next day. It's like Brown out, E Banks DUI. Like
that's right.
All that stuff happened after that. And I was like, what is going on? So I had to call you out on that.
E Banks is the poor man's Trevor Ariza.
Yes. And I think the trivia question from last week was, what is the black line on the Lakers jerseys in your drawing there?
I haven't looked that up. I've been lazy. Do you know what it's for?
I'm shocked that a Laker fan doesn't know that.
Do you know what it's for?
It's got to be for Chick dying. Chick Hearn.
Yeah. Wait. So.
It's got to be. Because that was back in. No?
You know, I think I got that before they had won any titles. I think I got that their first year. You're right. It could be because of Chick. It could be.
But I guess it depends on how old that is.
I want to say that was more like 2001.
It was 2001. I'm pretty sure, that was too early.
I'm pretty sure I had that in my college. Did I have those in my... I don't know. Maybe the summer between my senior year of college and when I was gone. I don't know. That's a good question. It could have been because a Chick died. Yeah. I remember I was in Florida. I just moved to Florida when Chick died.
This is probably making great radio.
Now you're just bringing me down.
We're talking about this drawing on the wall of Shaq and Kobe, and then they have the black, what is that, the ribbon on their jerseys.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to debate what that is. So if you do know, email the guys
Owen
at Fansmanship.
At Fansmanship.com. Yeah, if you actually are listening and you know, I'll actually try to look it up between now and
there
then. I said I would last time. But
I did look, and I might be wrong too, though.
Yeah, no, you're right. Chick did die, and they did wear a black thing for him, I think, for a season.
But that might be a little too old.
Yeah, yeah. So
anyways.
So did they make the right choice in Mike D'Antoni? What do you think about D'Antoni?
That's a tricky one. Because you don't know
totally
what would happen behind the scenes with Phil, right?
Well, let's hypothesize for a second. Let's say that Phil wanted some time, and let's say that the Lakers just didn't give it to him. They just went out and hired D'Antoni. Yeah. So I guess there's two questions. One, is Phil the right guy, or is D'Antoni the right guy for the job? And two, what's the crazy dynamic with, you know, Jim Buss and Jerry Buss and Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss? I think that's the subplot. And I think they're separate questions. So let's ask the first one first, basketball wise. Is it an okay pick? I wrote that it was the second best choice behind Phil Jackson. I thought that Phil would have brought the most stability, and that you had the highest downside Does that make sense? Like you don't have a chance of being totally crappy if Phil's your coach, but you also maybe you have a known entity on the upside, which is a championship potentially. But it's kind of the same thing that we've seen a couple of times as a Lakers coach. I think with D'Antoni now, you have maybe the second best choice from a basketball standpoint. I don't know how he fits in the roster. We'll talk about that in a second. But I also think that with D'Antoni, you have to take into account the fact that he has something to prove still. He's smarter than a lot of people think. He's got a lot of coaching experience, mm-hmm. both with the Suns and in the Knicks. But before that too, he was a coach for 10 years in Europe and in the NBA. So I don't think he's a bad pick per se. I think that if you thought Phil Jackson was the right pick, though, you blew it. If you're Jim Buss and you thought, basketball wise, Phil's the best pick, I have a hard time kind of figuring out where I even come out on it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp. Like, if I was a Laker fan, I would want someone with rings on his finger to be your coach, especially whatever it is, 5, 6. Now it's going to be 8 games into the season before he ever gets on the sideline.
Right.
And you're wondering, okay, can this team with Dwight Howard here for a year, can we make a run at a title this year with a new coach midseason? Probably not, unless it's somebody who's been there before or has rings. So that's why I was thinking Phil. Or I was thinking maybe, we talked about this on Twitter, we're going back and forth, I brought up Coach K. But how are you going to get him to leave Duke in the middle of the season? Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. No
way.
But
if you wanted somebody for 3 or 4 years, you have to go at least reach out to somebody like that. Because with D'Antoni, I almost feel like you're in the same boat as you were with Mike Brown. Someone who's
you're
somewhat
in the exact
unproven.
Same boat from a like who's the guy standpoint, but I think you have a better fit from an actual coaching standpoint.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Offensively, you would hope, but it's still questionable because what has he done? They had 2 or 3 good years in Phoenix, but that first year that they went to the playoffs and they made a nice run and went to the conference finals.
Was that the year Stoudemire got suspended for, was it game 6 or game 7? A bunch of the Suns players got suspended.
I forget.
For coming off the bench,
yeah,
I think. Yeah,
exactly. But there was that one year where they were like, they had a winning record in the postseason. But the next two, I think they just split their postseason games.
Right, they lost Joe Johnson.
So he hasn't proven anything, really.
Right.
So I'd prefer to have someone. I'd rather have Larry Brown out there almost. Someone who's at least won a title and is out there. But now you're going with a guy who, what did he do with the Knicks? The last time he was out there, he didn't do a whole lot for you.
Right, right, absolutely. And he looked pretty vanilla when he was on the Knicks. I mean, he's brought in to actually, make a big difference in what's going on, but I didn't actually feel like, with the Knicks, I didn't feel like that was even really happening. I felt like in a lot of cases, I don't know, his offense wasn't being run. Carmelo wasn't the right guy for his offense mm-hmm. for moving the ball. He never had a point guard that he wanted. And I thought his comments were really interesting when he came back. He said, I tried to do it without Steve Nash for a while and learned my lesson, which is an interesting commentary on what's going to happen for the Lakers in the future. Do they find the next Steve Nash? Chris Paul's maybe a free agent coming up here, and maybe it's always been his wish to play on the Lakers, even though he acts like he hates them right now. And he really does hate the Lakers right now.
Yeah.
So, for what we're thinking about, I'm happy that they got D'Antoni. I'm happy that they, did what they did to get their guy or the guy who they thought was their guy. But I think that the Phil Jackson thing, and let's talk about that for a second. I really thought my perfect hypothetical world, and we're gonna play games with my perfect hypothetical world going on here in a second as we move. But one thing that I thought about was the Pat Riley situation in Miami. So Phil comes back. If they actually like him there, and if he gets along with ownership, maybe he's the guy who gets to make basketball decisions for, 5 or 10 years in the future. He gets to be what Pat Riley is, or what Red Auerbach was, or Jerry West for the Lakers in the past. He coaches the team for a couple years. He grooms, say, like a Brian Shaw or a Kurt Rambis back even. You can bring mm-hmm. either of those guys back to assistant coach, mm-hmm. Among others, and grooms one of those guys to kind of take over. He goes up in the owner's suite after a year or two, and now one of those guys is coaching, and you have kind of a cohesive, unit, a place that people want to be basketball wise. And I feel like Miami is that, and they created that over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years with guys who are Riley disciples, like, you know, Van Gundy and Spoelstra now. But I always thought that that would have been like a really great use of Phil Jackson's talent and time, and he doesn't have to travel with the team all the time if he's if he's grooming somebody else. I mean, that's the whole idea.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean,
I could maybe see that happening, but I also know that he was never big on being upstairs. He never wanted to have a hand in ownership. That's why I was surprised that everything I heard about how Phil wanted all these demands.
Yeah, that was
that
weird.
Hasn't been his MO. And so I don't know. I kind of look at it like, if Kobe's happy, you got to be happy as a Laker fan, because he got his guy. He's calling D'Antoni, you know, a genius today.
Sure.
So Laker Nation, I guess, has got to be happy with number two. Will we see Phil ever again coaching? I really doubt it now. And maybe if we see Phil again, it's up in an upstairs role, but I don't even know if he's going to come back for that. I could see him kind of finally riding off into the sunset, kind of like Brett Favre finally has. He's done unretiring.
Thank God we haven't talked about Brett Favre in a while. Gosh.
But you never know. You know, all these quarterbacks are shaking up right now. Michael Vick's done. Let's bring back Brett Favre.
No, don't bring back Brett Favre.
All
Do
these
not.
Concussed quarterbacks. Yeah. Maybe Favre will come back.
Well, I was actually looking at the current list of current NBA coaches, and there aren't a lot of like really great big names on there. There's a lot of guys who are kind of like, yeah, I've kind of heard of that guy. I know he used to be an assistant and he's working really hard, but there's probably about half the guys on there are guys who you say, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, guys who have been probably assistants for a while and who are probably great basketball guys, but from a relevant standpoint, like Phil Jackson or Mike D'Antoni. I mean, they weren't guys like that were never in the running for the Lakers.
No.
Right. Because the Lakers have to stay relevant. They have to have a name coaching along with being good basketball wise. So Mike D'Antoni is that. He's a name. I'm going to run down names of players, and you tell me what your perception is of how they would fit into the Lakers or the D'Antoni system. And obviously Steve Nash fits into it, right?
Yeah.
He's the one that is automatic. Yes.
Yeah.
How about Pau Gasol?
I think he could almost fit into anything. He's a lot like Lamar, where, you know, he's a really good passing big man. A lot of people say he's the best passing big man. So I think he'll work with anything. He just needs to get up and down a little bit more. But I don't really think they're going to run and gun as much as they did back in the day, because they do have a true center. So they'll have to slow it down. So I think Gasol fits right in.
He can step out, hit a 15-footer, and that's like 18, 19-footer. Yeah.
Except for last night in clutch time when he missed that potential game winner.
Generally speaking,
yes,
he's even like shot a couple threes the last couple of years. He's kind of trying to extend his range. Kobe, this is the most interesting one, I think, like fitting into it. Is he gonna go Carmelo on D'Antoni?
That's who he is. Even last night when he didn't get the ball late, he's like, you should just gave me the dang ball, you know. That's Kobe, and he's already bought in and he's all for it. So yeah, I mean, like I said, if Kobe's happy, you got to be happy as a Laker fan.
We'll see how much he's actually, like, you know, just taking the ball and facilitating it to the other side of the court. Like, if he's in the middle of the court and he gets the ball in a swing pass, does he make that next swing pass?
I think
that's a really interesting question. I don't know. I don't know how to answer it yet.
Totally. Honestly. And one thing that had me scratching my head in the preseason was when Kobe and Nash would be bringing the ball up, and Kobe would actually bring the ball up, and Nash is just like trotting alongside, like,
and like run to the corner.
You
want to
give me the ball?
Yeah, like run to the corner or something. It's very
That's
weird.
One thing. Kobe likes to have the ball in his hands. Yeah. So
and Nash needs to when he's on the
exactly.
court.
Exactly.
I always thought that you start the two of them, but then like in the second and third quarters, maybe they're not on the court at the same time very much.
Yeah.
That was always my like ideal, is that Kobe's on the court maybe with Dwight Howard more, Nash is on the court with Gasol more. And you can kind of manage their minutes a little bit better that way, too, with Howard Nash. I don't know if you heard my theory about all the Lakers stars, that they're going to be hurt at some point in the season.
Oh, for sure. They're all old.
They're all old or injured or both.
Yeah. And a lot of them, like you guys were talking about, have back problems.
Yeah, Dwight Howard.
And that's something that doesn't go away. I got rear-ended a year ago, September of last year. and I'm still hurting. Look at me here. I'm like bending my back, like trying to pop it because it still keeps coming back. Yeah. And those are big dudes. I'm just 6 foot.
Yeah, you're not 6'10". But talk about, like,
a 7 foot guy, that back problem is going to keep flaring up on him. And it hasn't yet, but it will.
Right.
Like, he's going to have a setback at some point. That's how backs
always
are. He's
going to be out for a week or two.
Yeah.
And Nash has to lay down on the sidelines already when he's healthy. Yeah. Kobe always gets hurt somehow. He had an injury, and now Nash has his broken leg. I think the only one that you can maybe depend on is Powell, and I mean, you know, he's not exactly an alpha male. You know, he's not an alpha dog.
Yeah, we'll see. Come late in the year, that's when it matters. If everybody's healthy going into the playoffs, they can get in as the last seed and still make a run at this thing.
How do you see?
You saw with the Celtics with KG was all beat up. Like, they were horrible that year, but when they're healthy, even when they're old, they can make a run.
How do you feel like Dwight Howard fits into the D'Antoni system?
That'll be interesting. I think that's the big question mark. Can they get out?
Because he's getting
and run
a lot of points
him?
This year so far. He's scoring,
but he's still, you know, he's still a post player. You still got to put his back to the basket and get on the ball and make him work and out athletic, athletic size people. I love when people try to make words
jump
out of
over
athletic. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think that he's going to give you the defense, so I don't think they're so worried about, you know, no
what
D
does,
and D'Antoni, but offensively, it'll be very interesting to see how they mix him in there.
Meta world peace. I think this is, like I told Andy, like, he's a key to their season. That's why I did the small forward would you rather last week. You know, I think with those other guys out, Meta's going to have to find a way to, like, get efficient shots and score efficiently. I don't know if he's capable of scoring efficiently. Andy said he wasn't last week, and I don't feel like D'Antoni's system is, you know, puts a high prize on efficiency, but it does put a high prize on making open shots when they're given to you. And maybe Nash gets some open shots when he comes back. I don't know.
I think he might be the odd man out because he's such a defensive presence. This being our test, like, you know, that kind of happened a couple years ago with, like, Luke Walton and some of those guys were the odd man out, but it was because of their lack of defense. This is flipped, where he's more of a defender, but he's not quite the shooter. They could almost use a Luke Walton over him.
What's the
him
alternative,
right now,
though? I mean, what's the alternative on that roster? There is none, and they pay him, I think they pay Meta, like, what, like $8 million a year, $10 million a year?
Yeah.
You know, they're over the luxury tax because of him. I think he has one more year, or maybe this is his last year, on his contract, but I always argue that that's probably the worst offseason decision the Lakers ever made to bring him in, even though they won a championship the next year.
Yeah.
Re-signing Ariza for less than they paid Meta World Peace for a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. Ariza fits so much better, and I do feel like the Lakers would have, you know, continued to have a better chance over time. Because Ariza was a really good defender.
Exactly.
In that, I guess, the first championship year.
Yeah, and he's younger.
And he's younger
and
athletic.
And he could knock down some shots.
And
kinda
he was
like
a shooter. He was
Matt Barnes.
So they got Barnes, and I was like, okay, well, at least they have Barnes for those times. Now they got rid of Barnes, and who do they have now? Jody Meeks. They just kind of keep downgrading at that at that position, I feel like. And eventually, you know, you're going to be stuck with Jody Meeks not playing any defense and barely, you know, not being able to drive, needing plays run for you a little bit. It doesn't make a lot of sense. How about the bench? Like, just the depth in general for the Lakers just isn't good. We talked about Jameson last week, but, you know, when you talk about Jody Meeks, Steve Blake, who's hurt, Darius Morris, Jordan Hill. I mean, I feel like Jordan Hill is actually a guy in the D'Antoni system. I don't know why I think he can flourish, but I think that he's a guy who can be off the ball. And I think Dwight Howard and Jordan Hill are both going to kind of play the same position in the offense where it's, you know, you're not really doing a lot on the ball, maybe just setting a bunch of screens on and off the ball and rolling and maybe getting a lot of dunks because of it. That's kind of what I'm hoping.
I think that's where they're going to get in trouble, like, especially in the backcourt.
Right.
Like, if Nash can't defend somebody or it picks up some fouls,
right,
who's going to come in there and defend, like, Westbrook? You know, like, Blake can't get that done. You know, so they're going to have to help. So when you help with him, that leaves Durant wide open. So that's when they're going to start getting in trouble. There's some big games tonight. Like, I want to see, you know, how the Clippers go up against Miami and how OKC is looking against the Grizzlies. Like, I think those are the teams that are right there with the Lakers. And if they keep getting hot and they keep the momentum and the Lakers are still trying to figure things out for another couple months, they could run away with this division.
Run away, And on top of that, you know, I think when you think about just the NBA championship, Miami is, like, such a twice as much of a favorite as everybody else, you know, maybe four times as much. I mean, they're the clear top of the top of the food chain.
Yeah. And you saw it took them 1 year of playing together before they really got going. Sure, they made it to the finals, but they didn't play like
even
they
in
played
a stable organization.
Exactly.
Even in an organization led by Pat Riley that's stabilized. I was thinking about this and trying to figure out like what the best analogy was with the Lakers organization and what they're going through with Phil Jackson and Jim Buss and Jeannie Buss. And the best analogy I could think of was the movie Gladiator. The plot to the movie Gladiator is like exactly what's going on with the Lakers, where Phil Jackson's the maybe the Russell Crowe character who dad really liked, and now the son's in charge, and the son's sister is kind of likes the Gladiator guy. Right?
I mean, it's very Hollywood.
I mean, it totally is. Yeah. But it does parallel and the Joaquin Phoenix character, you know, being Jim Buss and, you know, being kind of jealous of the happiness that, you know, Phil Jackson brought his dad and now I'm in charge and kind of running things randomly. I feel like that's the perception, at least. I don't know if that's actually what's happening.
It's pretty close. Or like you guys mentioned last time, you kind of alluded to the Yankees.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing with Steinbrenner and Joe Torre and that whole situation where it's like...
Torre had to go.
Torre was, you know, it was almost like who's working for who type thing.
Right.
And that's what you have right now in LA. And it's like, I think that was a big part of the Phil thing. It's they're saying, you know what? We played this game kind of like with Favre and the Vikings, you know, and we've played this game. I think we're done here. Let's move on. But with D'Antoni for, what is it, 3 years?
3 years.
You're in the same boat you were with Mike Brown in my eyes.
Yeah, I feel like D'Antoni could be there for like 5 or 8 years, though. Like, he could be a long-term solution to their transition. In other words, so Kobe, like, gets old. Steve Nash gets old. Mm-hmm. But now you have Powell and Dwight, and you can maybe, like, draft a random... I mean, Phoenix... For everything, I mean, they drafted guys like Barbosa who fit right in. They drafted really well during the years D'Antoni was there. I really think that, you know, his knowledge of the international game gives him a little bit of an advantage when it comes to finding guys low in the draft where they get them or signing random free agent guys from overseas and getting them to come play. He's got a name. I mean, he coached in Italy for a long time. Maybe that's Jim Buss's thought is, you know, we get another slick little guard in here after Nash or to learn under Nash, and now we can still run the same system. Kobe retires, but it's all kind of within a system now, within a D'Antoni system that you envision it going. I'm sure Jim Buss does for, you know, five or eight years where they're running the same system now. I would hope anyway that's his kind of long-term plan, because you're right. If you just have D'Antoni and you're going to be as quick to make crazy decisions as they did to fire Mike Brown, it's not gonna end well.
Yeah. I guess the only saving grace is he doesn't cost as much as a Phil Jackson.
He doesn't.
$4 or $5 million versus 12.
Right.
You know?
Right. And that's a bus issue, not a fan issue to me. Because they're the Lakers. It's like the Dodgers now. You know, money shouldn't and doesn't, you know, matter. I mean it matters obviously, but like, you know, if we're gonna quibble, if you think Phil Jackson's the right coach and, you know, $5 or $10 million is the difference over 2 or 3 years, you know, I think that's not something that you really need to argue about. All right, we're gonna play a game. Here's the game. If I had like a drop for it, I would. But I'm playing these kind of would you rather or who'd you rather have games. And obviously, it's in a completely hypothetical world where you can choose between the two, and money doesn't matter, and the fact that they're on other teams doesn't matter.
Nice.
But who would you rather have coaching your team? So obviously, Mike D'Antoni is the first option. And everybody else, we're gonna have versus type of player notwithstanding, and history with the Van Gundy family notwithstanding. Do you think Jeff or Stan Van Gundy would have been good coaches for the Lakers, or better than Mike D'Antoni? Either of the Van Gundy brothers.
I don't want the Van Gundy brothers. I'm sorry.
No. I love those guys. They're such good coaches, and they're
hilarious.
Like,
Jeff's a hilarious commentator, but
they're both awesome.
Yeah. That was one of the first wisecracks I made. I'm like, bring in Stan. You know, it's just hilarious because he's one of the more respected coaches that's available. And Kupchak had said right off the bat, we want somebody with head coaching experience. So you think, okay. Well, there goes Shaw, who I thought should be given a call.
He's going to be on my list in a second.
For sure. But, like, really?
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah.
So Jeff and Stan, not so much Jeff because his brother's with Stan.
Yeah.
Jerry Sloan, who I think has similar like principles as those guys, maybe even obviously more old school even than those guys, probably wouldn't have got along with Dwight Howard. But all that being said, would he have been a better choice than D'Antoni?
No, I don't think so.
No.
And I don't think it's because of anything more than I don't know if Kobe could play for a grinder like that, an old school Utah Jazz head coach.
Isn't that like who Kobe is?
He was such a rival for so long for the Lakers. I don't know if he can play for him.
I don't think Sloan would ever like go to LA or whatever. But yeah. You know, like I said, if anything could happen, I feel like Kobe is that grinder. Like Kobe wants to yell at his guys for all the stuff that Sloan yells at his players for.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Then again, Karl Malone was a Laker for a minute, so yeah, I don't know
exactly. Karl Malone. All right, so that's kind of my first like, of course. It's not going to happen list. Guys who are coaches right now in the league, Eric Spoelstra, would you rather have D'Antoni or Spoelstra as your coach?
No. I think he's still lucky to have a job in Miami after their struggles in his first year.
Okay.
Like he was lucky to make it through year one, and now after winning in year two.
But now he's pretty solid.
He's the man.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess he's year solidly two with in LeBron. There. He's been there longer. But.
And he's solidly like in that place. Like he's not going anywhere. He's what, like 38 or something.
Exactly.
He's not going anywhere until... Probably yeah. LeBron goes somewhere. I mean, he's attached at the hip to those guys now, having won a championship with them. But you think D'Antoni is still the better option over Spoelstra, like all else being equal on some random team?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Doc Rivers.
I'd rather have Doc.
Okay.
Doc is awesome. He's one of those guys, like I could see Shaw being in his shoes. If you give Shaw a chance with a team right now that's a good team, not like some of the teams Byron Scott had, but give him a good roster, I could see him being successful in four or 5 years.
Okay.
Because he was a guard. He was like the quarterback out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like Jason Kidd could probably be a great coach when he finally walks away 10 years from now.
Rick Adelman.
No.
He was a guy who was in the
same thing as Sloan.
He was in the mix, though, back when Brown was hired.
For sure.
He was in the mix. And he's not as old school as Sloan. I mean, he coached the Jailblazers.
Yeah. That's what I'm
when
saying.
They were really good.
He was too much of a rival back in the day. I just can't.
And he coached the Kings?
I can't see it happening, a former King or Blazer coaching the Lakers. But I know you just said like to throw all that stuff out, but
I respect
can't.
Him. Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
I respect him for it. Vinny Del Negro across town. I know he gets made fun of a lot, but I had to throw him in there.
I don't think so. He's largely unproven, too.
Okay, two college coaches, Coach K.
Of course. I think
you
Coach
think he would have been a better choice than...
For sure. He was one of the first ones I thought of because of what he was able to do. Take this Olympic team, all these head cases, and never give up with that team. That team never let up.
Wasn't that kind of a situation, though, where you could play a very simple style of basketball with those guys and you could really you didn't have to like X and O throughout a whole NBA season? And do you think Coach K, I mean, I always feel like his style of basketball at Duke isn't super complicated. It's like, I'm going to be more intense. I'm going to play better defense. I'm going to, you know, take good shots when I get them, but his offenses don't seem super complex to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think part of me thinks that's what the Lakers need though, because they struggled so hard initially learning this faux Princeton offense, and then they struggled so hard trying to learn the triangle. Remember, like it was painful back in the day trying to learn the triangle. So I think Coach K or Phil would have been someone who could come in here and that team could still make a run at a title.
Right.
Now I don't know.
You don't know, but Izzo. The last college coach. So those are the two college coaches that I like, that I put in my head because neither one of those guys have coached in the NBA.
Yeah, and probably not Izzo. He's too unproven. That next level.
All right, and we talked about Phil Jackson, Nate McMillan, D'Antoni or Nate McMillan?
D'Antoni.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think McMillan hired really great assistants when he was in Portland, and I think he's a really good, decent manager. But I still think he has some to learn. And I think D'Antoni doesn't really have a lot to learn. He has more to prove than he has to learn.
And I love McMillan, too, because like I was saying before the show, I'm a huge Seattle or was a huge Seattle Supersonics fan.
Yeah.
And, I was a huge fan of McMillan's. He's one of those guys, like I was saying, he's a on-the-court kind of quarterback, if you will. Kind of like Avery was. Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, he was an all right coach there for a little while because he had that point guard background.
Avery Johnson. Okay, we're going to go to Laker alumni now.
Okay.
To the Laker alumni portion of our Would You Rather. There's four names. Mike Dunleavy.
No.
Coach
he wouldn't last
like
four
90,
games.
94.
Yeah. Didn't he already get fired 4 games in somewhere? I don't remember.
I don't know. Maybe is he a coach now? No, I don't know.
He got canned pretty early
this
though.
Year.
No, not this year.
Oh, with the Clippers.
Yeah.
He was on the Clippers, and that ownership was a mess. And I think he just didn't like the way they were going. So he said, "I'm over it." But you know, there's a guy who's a basketball mind who's proven.
I wonder what he's doing now.
Maybe he's in like the Adelman camp. What do you think? Like far as like that group.
Same boat. A little bit older generation. A little bit more old school of a coach.
Yeah.
I don't know if those guys are going to get back into it. You saw with Larry Brown. I mentioned him. He has a ring.
He's like in his 70s though. Like
But he still wants to coach, and he's like at SMU right now.
Is he coaching in college right
now? He's coaching at SMU.
Who knew?
Minor league college, it's kind of a shocker. He's got a ring, good recruit for college. I mean.
Okay, three more names, former players, guys from the 80s and 90s. The one guy that you mentioned, Byron Scott. Do you think he would have before? I feel like Byron would have been the right guy if they could have got him when they hired Mike Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been a good fit. Or when Phil Jackson left the first time. He would have been a good fit back when they hired Rudy T, and that was a joke, right? I mean, the Rudy who filled in for Rudy T after him, Rambis. I don't even remember.
It was one of those guys.
Who ended up coaching the rest of that year?
Del Harris, Rambis, all those guys.
Del Harris was like the '90s, though.
He was before that, yeah.
I mean,
but
I'd rather
have him run together for me
than a lot of guys. Yeah. So Byron.
At the time, I might have gone with him before Mike Brown. Right now. Probably not.
Byron coached the Nets when they went to the finals, right?
Exactly.
One,
he had
years,
a good run. So
years.
I see him being a couple steps ahead of like a new coach, like we were just talking about
like
Brian Shaw.
He's next on my list.
He's
Brian
got the
Shaw.
Advantage over Brian Shaw.
Well,
I think both would be really good.
And they talked about the Lakers burning the bridges with Brian Shaw when he left. I mean, it's like he's a talented guy that's respected. He's going to be a coach in the league at some point. And they just kind of like just burn it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They hired a bunch of recycled assistant coaches and guys. I mean, Darvin Ham's been putting time in the D League as a coach. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like you got to give Shaw a shot somewhere. And here's my dark horse. Here's the guy who I think would have been the perfect heir apparent again to Phil Jackson. If Phil would have come in for 2 years and said, okay, I'm going to half and half it with somebody, is Rambis. I think Phil and Rambis would have been awesome pair. I think Rambis could have come in and like coach the away games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Yeah, go you coach the away games, or you coach the ones, you know, like the Vin Scully schedule, right? You coach the games east of the Mississippi. You know, I'll coach the games west of the Mississippi, and we'll go from there. I really feel like Rambis could have been regroomed for that role again, and he's another guy who the Lakers have snubbed at least once, and he's family friends with the Buses, you know, with Jeannie. I mean, his wife and Jeannie are like best friends.
Yeah.
What do you think about him?
I think the whole, Phil not being able to go to all the games, I think that also played a big part. I thought they wanted a coach that was going to be there.
Right.
Like, because that's unprecedented. You don't see that happening very often, especially at this level. But right. Rambis, I don't know. I still have a hard time seeing through the black, thick glasses and all that from back in the day.
I think he had surgery. He's good now.
Oh, yeah.
He's good now.
It's not the glasses, but I just see him as kind of that.
The long hair.
Yeah, that role player. And was he ever the man? No. Would he be the man as a coach? It's hard to accept that.
But he had crap in Minnesota. And he, you know.
It's true.
He coached Kevin Love up. Remember when Love first came in and they had beef for a little while?
Yeah.
Love and Rambis. And I thought that was kind of weird. But they got through it and Love became like an amazing player. I think Rambis would be a really good choice for somebody like the Lakers. I think, you know, who want to run the triangle, who want to have a system. But Jim Buss really turned his back on the triangle, didn't want Shaw, didn't want Rambis, didn't want Jackson.
For sure.
Anybody from that era, and really went with a new guy. I think D'Antoni's keeping the assistants. So I think that's also a weird thing. Like, are things really going to change that much if he's keeping all the assistant coaches? I don't know. I think that's a weird thing to do. But I guess there's probably nobody out there and available.
Exactly.
Unless you go to guys like Shaw or, you know, or other old coaches. I know like Del Harris is an assistant, I think, in Dallas, right? That kind of a situation.
Yeah. I just don't think they wanted to rock the boat all that much.
Yeah.
And the more we're talking through some of this stuff, I think a lot of it comes down to keeping Kobe happy. And, you know, he was the childhood idol of his.
And keeping Jim Buss happy.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. But I think they just didn't want to rock the boat too much, keep the assistants that Kobe has a pretty good relationship with, bring in a guy that he always looked at and admired. And and have fun and run and be able to run and gun and score all your points, Kobe.
One last thing before we go to a break. Somebody said that Kobe, and now I'm losing my train of thought. Somebody said that Kobe was in Italy, and now I can't remember. So we're going to go to break. And
He was a big fan of him when he played overseas.
Right, right.
So I think that was a big part. He said he was his favorite
keeping
player.
Keeping Kobe happy. Okay, we're to the keeping Kobe happy. So Phil Jackson said that he didn't want to be around when Kobe's physical skills deteriorated, and he still thought he was better than he actually was at some point. And Phil told people that like years ago. And are we at that point is a question that I have. And are the Lakers still a viable championship contender as long as that's the case? I think that's the big question for them this year, whoever the coach is. Right?
Yeah. I mean, so the question is, can they win with Kobe being the man?
Kobe still thinking he's the man anyway.
I think he still is. I think he's one of the best three players in the West. He can still shoot it. He's like Jordan toward the end of his Bulls career. He's not at the stage where Jordan was when he played for the Wizards. He will get to that stage, and I could see Kobe being like Jordan, where, you know, Jordan goes out on the golf course and he thinks he could beat anyone he plays.
Right.
He's that confident, even though his skills deteriorated.
Right.
I don't think Kobe is there yet. Two or three years from now, sure, but you know, we might have had three coaches by then.
So you do think he can be the man on a team that contends?
Oh, for sure. Because he's still a lights out shooter. He's still one of the best closers in the league, and he's still a better defender than most off guards in the league. You know, he could even lock up like Durant and some of those guys.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a break on the fansmanship.com podcast. As a reminder, you can find our podcast on iTunes. I know Brian downloads it every day.
I gave it a 5-star rating, and you should too.
Oh, hey now, and I did too. So I think there's probably 2 ratings on iTunes, but take a look at it. You can download it there. You can download it on our website. And you're listening to the fansmanship.com podcast on fansmanship.com. I got to drive, delivering hot pizza pies, living the life of the sexiest pizza kid. See me come to your crib, you better greet with Terry. I don't take no lip, and I remember when you... So what is fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website by the fans, for the fans.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com. By the fans, for the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com. By the fans, for the fans. Get the 15 minutes or less. He's a super driver.
Makes his own rules. He's a super driver. And welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast. Owen Main here with Brian Milne. And we are not talking about the Lakers anymore.
Calling an audible.
Calling an audible. Victor 9, Omaha. So I want to talk about college football, and we haven't done a lot of college football this season beyond just what's going on with Cal Poly, but I want to talk FBS football bowl subdivision and talk about what's going on there this year. I think earlier there was a 4-team playoff that was announced that starts, is it 2014, Brian?
Yeah, in a couple of years.
So there's going to be this year and next year, mm-hmm. where it's still going to be the same old BCS system, and in 2014 season, during the 2014 season, the championship game will actually be January of 2015. Mm-hmm. There will be a 4-team playoff in BCS. Mm-hmm. So I know that it's all because of money and contracts and so forth, but a playoff this year seems like it would be really useful.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the top 25 now, and it's like, who are these teams in it? I mean, you're looking at the BCS rankings right now. Number one, Kansas State, Oregon, Notre Dame, Alabama, which is lost, Georgia, Florida, LSU, and then Texas A&M.
That's 4 out of the 8 that are SEC teams.
Yeah, it's very SEC heavy because
the SEC is really good.
Yeah, and they don't really go outside their conference to play. You don't see Florida playing this side of Mississippi. So, you know, Boise State wants to bust that BCS bubble. It was different now with the conference realignment, but before this year, the last couple of years, they really never had a chance to do that.
Right.
Because those teams weren't going to go to their house. You see it a lot in college baseball. You really see, it's not an East Coast bias as much as it is, there are so many teams in the SEC and some of those big conferences that only play in their conference. So every time, I remember when Cal Poly went out and they played just one of the Big Ten schools, they got swept in all three of those games. This is college baseball. And their RPI still jumped up like 20 points because they played a big team from a big conference. So when those teams from those conferences keep playing each other, and then when they go out of conference, they don't play anybody, they're always going to be in the top half of the rankings. So the teams, a lot of these teams like the TCUs and some of the Hawaiis and some of these teams out west are never going to be able to crack that system unless it changes, unless you let eight teams into a playoff or whatever it is. And I think college football needs that. Look at all the other sports that have that. We wouldn't have had the Cardinals winning the World Series if only two or three teams got to fight for a title.
Okay.
Or the LA Kings in the NHL, because they got in, they kind of backed themselves into the postseason. Or any of these teams, the Red Sox a few years ago when they won it as a wild card.
The Cardinals won it as a wild card too. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So
interesting.
It just would be nice if the NCAA treated Division One football like they treat every other Division One sport, even Division One AA football.
Their argument would be that Division One, they do. It's the FBS. It's
exactly.
It's these select, 100 schools or something, 108 schools or whatever, however many there are in the FBS, who have kind of gone off the beaten trail. They've gone off and done their own thing. And it's really weird. It in some ways speaks to the inefficiency or the lack of actual control the NCAA has for a system that they let go for a little while, and now they have no control over it. It's a lot like colleges letting the NCAA go in the NCAA's history back when it first started. The colleges kind of let it let it govern them, and then all of a sudden they had to follow its guidelines. Yeah. Whether they liked it or not, it's really an intractable issue, right? I mean, the whole situation.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do a playoff because the infrastructure wasn't there this year or next year. But what if we like to play what if games? So I want to know what if there was a playoff? How would that affect this year's rankings? How would that affect the postseason? If the FBS had a playoff system like the FCS.
Yeah, I think
that had even eight teams in it.
Yeah, you'd have to come up with some hybrid scenario where it kind of follows the BCS. You still get those bowl games, so everybody gets their money.
They're called bowls, at least. I mean, yeah. I feel like the semifinal could be the Fiesta. Like, those games can be bowls. I guess what's the issue there? That teams wouldn't travel to a semifinal game at a neutral site, right?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, the logistics remain to be seen, but you can still pull it off. If you had it, say, an 8-team playoff, you'd have four games on that opening weekend. There's your four bowl games right now. There's four BCS bowl games, and then there's a championship game. So then in this scenario, you'd actually almost be able to add two more bowl games and give the schools and everyone even more money, because you'd need to have bowl games for the semifinal games. So you have four games on the first weekend of the postseason, two semifinal games in the second week, and then you have the BCS championship game 3 weeks in.
So the first round might be at a neutral site. The second round maybe the higher ranked team gets the home game in the semifinals. Maybe the semifinals are at actual stadium, you know, at the home of whatever teams are playing, and then the final is again at a neutral site or something. Yeah. I feel like
that's probably the hang up though, because it's not giving a city enough time to prepare for these games is what it is.
To do all the convention.
Yeah.
I mean, you could facilities wise, you could get a stadium ready to play in a week, or, you know, have that contingency. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of everybody traveling there and making it a spectacle that like the Super Bowl is, or that any of the bowls are really.
Exactly.
I mean, all the bowls have charity that goes along with it. The players go there a week before. They spend time doing different things. And that wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
But like you said, if you've already gotten that from the first round of the playoffs, now you're focused in on winning and actually who's better. And you're getting the TV and you're getting the stadium revenue. I don't know who loses in that scenario, right?
That's why I don't think the 1AA model would really work if you had a 16-team playoff, or now we're talking about the 20-team playoff this year. I think there's too many games. You're having 4, 5, 6 weeks of games, which I don't think you can do and pull it off with all the logistics of bringing 100,000 fans into one city for this huge game with all the TV revenue and everything circled around it. But I think you could pull it off with 3 weekends of games. So, I don't know. We kind of took the top 8 in the BCS rankings and threw a bracket together. And if the playoffs started today, you want to hear what that would look like?
Let's hear it.
So the top seed, if you're just taking the BCS...
1 versus 8.
Yeah, if you're just taking the BCS ratings right now, you'd have Kansas State against the 8th seed, which is Texas A&M.
5 of those teams then are in the SEC. I didn't realize Texas A&M was up there, too.
Yeah, they're the 8th seed.
So 5 of them are in the SEC.
And then you'd have Alabama and Georgia on the top half of that bracket.
Okay.
The 4-5. Then you have Notre Dame, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And then at the bottom of the bracket, you'd have the 2 seed, Oregon, against LSU.
Okay, so you do have a Pac-10 representative at least. Yeah. That's good. And Oregon's that 2 seed.
And that's just taking the top 8 in the BCS. So the BCS rankings could still play a part of that. Then you could get 8 teams. And, I mean, really after the top 8 or top 10 and the top 25, does anyone really deserve a shot at the title?
I don't think,
I don't know.
Yeah, if you're going to again, if you're going to quibble about 8 versus 9, then you should not be number 8. You should be number 6.
Yeah.
If TCU gets left out because they lost 2 games and they're rated number 9, then they lost 2 games. I mean, if they're in a worse conference, I mean, and I know they're in a better conference this year. They're in the Big 12, right, this year. But that's the concept. I mean, if San Diego State wants to make it, they got to win all their games, maybe lose one or something to a good, really good team. But at least they have a chance now where they don't have a chance currently.
Exactly.
If they lose any games, and maybe if they... Maybe if they don't lose any games, they still might not have a chance. I know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who talk about Kansas State that way. Like, why is Kansas State up there?
Yeah. That's true. And, I mean, one other argument was for not having a playoff was because of the 1AA model where there's just too many more games for teams to play. To win the title, you have to play another 3 or 4 games.
4 more games, for a team who's not one of the bye teams.
But in this scenario... I mean, you're going to have 8 teams that would be playing that one additional game, which they would anyways if they're going to play in a bowl game. And then you have 4 teams that would play one additional game than they normally would, and 2 teams that would play 2 more games. But those 2 teams that make it to the title game aren't going to care about 2 extra games. And if they want, they could drop off one of their regular season games. You don't need to play a full schedule. There's teams that go in with 13 games all the time, or 12 games, whatever it is, one less game.
Right.
So if you think you're going to be good enough, bite the bullet, don't have one extra home game
that
you could.
Have an extra bye week.
And save that extra bye week.
Well, and you still get a few weeks off between your last game and the first round, right? I mean, you still have at least 1 week off.
Oh, totally. The championship game.
If not 2 or 3 weeks off.
Yeah, right now the championship game is until January 9th or whatever it is. So you can still play this model, still have a bye week for Thanksgiving, and still not have to play over Christmas weekend, and you'd still be able to fit in those 3 rounds.
It's stupid not to.
You just solved it on fansmanship.com.
Bam.
Now.
Bam.
No, but I think it's interesting because we're going to be talking about, you know, the FCS and Division 1AA's playoffs are coming up. And it's just an interesting model. Like every NCAA championship sport plays some kind of bracketed tournament at the end of the year, whether it's baseball or basketball, whatever it is. And people love the bracketology of this. That's what makes March Madness. So why don't we have it in Division 1 when we have it in 1AA, Division 2 and 3 and every other level?
Right. Yeah. It's a good question. I think it's one that needs to be asked and continue to be asked. In other words, I think the 4-team playoff eventually isn't just a 4-team playoff. Once they realize what they can do with it, once they realize, and hopefully people watch it and it's not this like, bizarre thing that I think some of the bowl supporters are hoping it might be.
Well, think about if we had a 4-team playoff this year. Right now, it would be Kansas State, against Alabama, and Oregon versus Notre Dame. So, but Georgia gets left out. Florida would get left out. LSU would get left out. But all those schools only have one loss.
That is insane.
And it's in the SEC.
Four through eight is all SEC teams.
Yeah. That blows my mind. You can't be expected to survive the SEC undefeated. Excuse me,
four through nine, right? Because that's South Carolina?
Yeah. So how are you supposed to be expected to survive the SEC undefeated? Nobody can. Not even Alabama can pull it off this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at UCLA at number 17.
There you go.
The Bruins.
They'll be higher after this weekend.
Did you hear? Whoa, wow. Look at that. Predicting a UCLA win.
Well, SC's looking up at them right now.
Have you, did you read the article today about SC not being allowed to stab their dagger in the middle of the field this week?
No, I had
UCLA,
not heard that.
UCLA told them that if they do that before the game, that they will not be allowed to perform at halftime.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard some of the students tagged an S in between the U and the C at UCLA's. At the front of their campus. That's nice.
Yeah, that's probably the case. And
yeah.
I enjoy college football rivalries. I think the more annoyed both sides are, the better those games turn out to be.
That happened at Atascadero one year. I think when they were playing against Paso Robles High School, some of the kids came down from Paso and painted a crimson PR at midfield there.
Back in the day, Coast Union...
That was like in the 90s.
Back in the day, Coast Union and Templeton used to have a pretty big rivalry.
Yeah.
And probably like... Two out of the 4 years I was in high school, somebody probably like 2 weeks before the Templeton game came to Coast and put like plant killer in a tee in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So there'd be like, you know, there's no way to do that because the grass all dies in a tee.
Yeah.
And it's a big tee in the middle of the field.
I remember hearing about that actually.
The tee up in Templeton also above their high school also was red a few times too.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I remember.
Look at us going from global stories to local. And micro local.
And speaking of, yeah, that's really micro local, right? That's what that is. Cal Poly, speaking of local, their football team has two losses on the year. They have their final game coming up here at Northern Arizona. I didn't realize before this week that Northern Arizona plays in a dome. And I think that's pretty interesting when you get into FCS teams, in other words, the old 1AA, smaller time college football, who play in domes because either they have to because of the weather or just because they have a multi-purpose dome. It sounds like Northern Arizona plays their basketball games at this dome as well.
Mm-hmm.
You've been to that dome, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about what's it like in a smaller dome, I guess. Is it weird?
It is weird. I mean, you have to there because it... In Flagstaff,
what are they at, like 6,000 feet in Flagstaff?
They're like almost 7,000 feet.
Right.
So that's where a lot of the Olympians like go to train. There's a lot of UFC guys that go up there and train too, because a lot of those guys live in LA or on the coast.
Okay.
And they want to go fight up there and they get in the best condition that they can. And you have to go to a higher elevation. Right. So when I was covering Cal Poly at the Tribune, yeah, we went up there in 2003 to cover the game. And Cal Poly got blown out, and they looked tired after a couple quarters because you have these coastal guys that live at an elevation of maybe 700 feet going to 7,000 feet.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I was struggling, and I'm pretty good shape, and I was struggling just walking to the arena.
Up the stairs, yeah.
Don't tell my former employer this, but I went out there a couple days early, and I went fishing there because fishing out there is amazing.
Uh-huh.
And I remember just hiking down from the highway, catching a couple trout, hiking back to the car, and I was as out of breath as I've ever been.
You wrote a book on fishing, didn't you?
I did.
What's it called?
Fishing Central California.
Fishing Central California. Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. So you really did go there for the fishing, and you probably did actually
catch
some fish.
It was a business trip, but yeah, I know how to make the most of my downtime when I'm waiting for kickoff.
Likewise. I was actually up in Laramie this year for Cal Poly playing in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And so they have some precedent for this, playing at over 7,000 feet, which is Laramie. It's the highest elevation for any FBS team and maybe in Division I overall. I mean, that's really high up there.
Yeah.
And people talked about it being maybe an issue, and it didn't seem to be an issue. I mean, they upset the Cowboys. I think the bigger things that will be an issue is just the fact that Northern Arizona is so closely, so much like them. I mean, you look at some of the predictions from like the Sagarin predictions and stuff like that. They're like, they have like a 0.2 point difference in terms of their prediction. I mean, it is really close as far as who's going to win the game. It's in Northern Arizona, so maybe they get the edge a little bit. But Cal Poly played a similar team who was similarly talented, I guess. I would say Sac State is pretty close like to them this year. I from watching it on TV anyway, there were some similar things. Cal Poly didn't play a good game, but I don't know how many other times they've been this closely matched throughout the year. I feel like they got a really easy schedule in the Big Sky.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that. They got a really easy schedule in the Big Sky. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to play Eastern Washington or Montana State. They did go to North Dakota and win in a dome earlier in the year. They do practice on artificial turf. That might have been an issue years ago, but it's not anymore, right? I mean,
they better hope it's not, because this game is huge. You win and you're in, and you don't and you're, who knows where you're at? You might be back where you were in 2004 when they're left on the outside looking in, because they had a couple losses late in that season. And granted, they didn't have as much a name back then, but I still don't think they don't have a name like a Montana or a Montana State or an Eastern Washington. So if Cal Poly loses this game, the committee's going to have an excuse to leave them out. And that's a lot of times that's difference maker.
And tell me this, though. Isn't this why they got in the Big Sky? So that when all else being equal, they would get the benefit of the doubt? Isn't that why the conference change was such a positive thing for them, right? I mean, that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah,
that's
a big part of it. And, yeah, the future of this conference is a lot brighter than the future of the last conference. So, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you go with what you know. And, yeah, it helps to have those other teams next to you, and maybe they do get a lot more respect than they did in their first year in the Great West.
I mean, they're still ranked, I think, like 11th or something like that, even despite the two losses. I mean, that's pretty good. Deontay Williams, their leading rusher, is like in the top four or five in all-time single-season rushing yards now. And he originally started at Northern Arizona. He played his freshman year, I think, or freshman, sophomore year there, and has been at Cal Poly for the last 2 years. Such high talent level at a skill position isn't on offense anyway. I mean, you've had James Noble come through, you've had Ramses Barden come through, but most of the time Cal Poly is known for their defensive skill guys that they're able to recruit and develop. I guess Camille Loud you could talk about as far as an offensive guy, but more recently, how does Cal Poly get a guy like, I mean, you look at this guy, this Deontay Williams guy. I mean, he is incredibly athletic. He is on TV. I've listened to other announcers talk about how he's the man amongst boys. I mean, he looks like just a full grown man running guys over, running faster than other guys.
Yeah.
I think Cal Poly fans should be counting their blessings, the fact that they have a guy like that, because I don't see any other guys like that in the program that have that kind of like physical maturity.
Yeah. It's like Ramses Barden. Right. How did they get him? It was a total fluke where a guy just falls through the system, isn't on somebody's radar. You get him here, and the guy has, you know, a great off season and just works it. And a lot of times that's a great motivator, too, not getting looked at the UCLAs or the USCs of the world. Right. You know, I want to show all these people that they're wrong, and I want to be the man in this division of football.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he plays, especially, or how they key on him. I know at Sacramento State, they hit Deontay pretty hard a couple times. Mm-hmm. Not that he was super fazed by it, but he was frustrated. You could tell when he was coming out the field at Eastern Washington as well. The other teams were frustrating him. I think, you know, if you're a triple option team, and I wrote about this too, you gotta go to your fullback, whether it's working or not. If you don't go to your fullback and you try to pitch out to the outside and they stop it, now you're totally out of options.
Yeah.
So you got to see Akinyene Umo get a lot of carries this weekend.
That's something they were kind of missing the last time around up there, too. I mean, they had a decent running game. This was in the Chris Peterson, like Geno Randall era.
Okay.
Peterson being the quarterback, Randall being the running back. And Randall was a good running back, but if I remember correctly, he was pretty beat up for that game.
Right.
And they just couldn't control the clock. And then, you know, Northern Arizona had a running back who just went gangbusters against them, had like 100 and whatever, 30 yards rushing and three touchdowns. He just ran silly.
At some point in the late 90s, I went to a Cal Poly Northern Arizona game, or maybe it was like early 2000s at Cal Poly. And I remember thinking it was weird, number one, that they were the Lumberjacks and they're from Arizona, because you don't think of Arizona being in the mountains or anything.
Until
you get up there. And then obviously Cal Poly lost. And I say obviously because they've never beat a team from Arizona. They're 0-4 or 0-6 or something against Northern Arizona. And
they're 0-8 against them, yeah.
0-8 against Northern Arizona and 0-2, I think, against Arizona. They're like 0-10 all time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting stat, I feel like, in all the years it hasn't happened. Maybe, you know, this is the team to do it. I don't know. If they are, then they certainly get will get a bid to the playoffs. I mean, yeah. I think that's a pretty sure thing.
For sure. They could get a bye. If they're in the top, they could finish in the top 12 and get a bye. That'd be great.
Right. You know? If they beat them, I think it's justifiable that they might get a bye. If they lose, they may even get to still play. There's a slight chance of that, although not a lot of people are super sure about that one.
All three of those losses would all be on the road.
Yep.
So
they're 5-0 at home.
Unfortunately, they're on the last month and a half of the season.
You know, I was looking at this, and they played on the road this year, at Sac State, at North Dakota, at Wyoming, at Eastern Washington, and at Northern Arizona. Did I say Northern Arizona already?
Mm-hmm.
Sac State, Eastern Washington, Wyoming. Where else did they go? Sac State, Eastern Washington, mm-hmm. Wyoming. Come on, help me out here.
I don't know.
Northern Arizona.
I'm not the beat writer anymore there.
Yeah. Oh, they went to Southern Utah.
There you go.
No, Weber State. I knew it was in Utah.
Ogden.
They went to Weber State.
And little Ogden.
They beat Weber State. And so they played like four really good teams on the road is what I'm saying. They played Sac State, Northern Arizona, Eastern Washington, and Wyoming on the road. Those are like their four hardest opponents. Those are their four best opponents that they'll play this year.
Yeah.
All on the road. Look at you all prepared.
They can't get beaten at home, but yeah, those road games, it's just a tough slate.
They had easy games at home, though. Like San Diego was, I mean, turned out to be not a great team. I know they're in the Pioneer League, I think, which is like the lowest or second lowest ranked league, but they're at the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Davis was down this year. Northern Colorado wasn't that great this year. Portland State was their toughest home game. And they got by them. I thought that was a good win at home, but Idaho State's like one of the worst teams in FCS.
Yeah.
They ran up like 500 yards of rushing on them. So, it's just kind of a scheduling quirk. They had an easy Big Sky schedule, but a lot of the hard games that they had were on the road. So,
so explain this to me.
Yeah.
So now in the playoffs in NCAA or FCS, is 20 teams this year.
20 teams
when
this year?
When I covered way back when, was 16 teams.
Yep.
So now this is the intermediate step between
16 and 24. Next year, I think it's going to start being 24. And this is, again, there's so much more excitement for so many more teams having an opportunity to get in the system, get in the dance. I mean, so UCLA is ranked number 17 right now in FBS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, UCLA fans are glad about their team, but there's not this like, ooh, maybe we can get hot and make a run.
Exactly.
Because there's no chance of making a run.
Postseason.
They've lost, what, two or three games already. They're done. There's a postseason. I mean, it's a bowl game. They'll get into a good bowl game, especially if they beat USC this weekend. But UCLA and Cal Poly in their respective divisions are in a really similar place, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was all about, you know, who are the top two teams, Cal Poly's got no chance after losing to Sac State.
Yeah.
Not even after losing to Eastern Washington.
Exactly.
After losing to Sac State, they got no chance of being the top two, probably no chance of being the top four or eight. Although if they would have beat Eastern Washington, they might have had a shot at it. But the idea is that at this point in the season, Cal Poly fans still have thoughts of a national championship. They're still checking their team's websites. They're still going. There are fans traveling to the Northern Arizona game because they're excited about the opportunity to maybe get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If FBS were like that, I feel like it would bring more excitement. I'm also like a UCLA fan. And I think if UCLA had a chance, I would be paying a lot more attention to that UCLA-USC game this weekend.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I fall Florida. I've always liked Florida. They have one loss, and it's like, okay,
to Georgia,
playing out the string.
Right.
You know?
The one loss to their rival.
Be that way.
One loss to their rival on a neutral field.
Exactly. It shouldn't be that way. You know? You should be... The LA Kings run to the Stanley Cup finals
was
wouldn't
awesome.
Have happened.
And it was awesome.
If they're in this scenario.
Here's the question. Did the best team win? Maybe not.
Best team at the end of the year.
At the end of the year won.
Like the San Francisco Giants this year.
I don't want to talk about the Giants.
You know what I'm saying, though.
I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Or the Cardinals the years before.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So Cal Poly's got a chance to get into the dance. And if they go somewhere, maybe I'll go. I'm not going to Northern Arizona you ask me. But I might go somewhere, or maybe they'll even be able to have a buy and host a game. That would be really cool if they could be Northern Arizona and get a game at Spanos. Speaking of home games in Cal Poly, the basketball team kicked off their season. They lost at TCU last week. Watched it over at Firestone. Ended up sitting next to the table with all the red shirts, so that was kind of fun to check it out. First home game is tomorrow night, and I'll be there. It's at 7 o'clock at Mott Gym, and they play not Northern Arizona, Northern Colorado, who they beat in football this year.
There you go.
At Cal Poly. And so that'll be fun. That's where I'll be. Any closing thoughts on anything we talked about? Any?
It'll just be interesting to see how the next couple weeks shape up. I mean, what does Tim Walsh have left on his contract there? Another year? I mean,
good question.
This win could be huge for him in keeping him here for a while. Because, I mean, same kind of thing with Ellerson.
To lock him up.
I mean, yeah, a couple years where they had good seasons, winning seasons. In 2004, they're knocking on the door.
They're always on the cusp. They're always right on the cusp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then in 2005, they got in, and it was all of a sudden, it was like, okay, they made some noise. They beat Montana. And it was like, okay, this program's starting to make a name for itself. Then they got Ramsey's Barton and all these really good players in a few years
later.
But
they always lost a couple of crappy games, man.
Yes.
That was always the issue.
They got went to a playoff game
with Ramsey's.
They had Weber State here. They lost that game. And then Ellerson leaves for Army. And then you bring in a new coach here who needs a couple years to get it going.
Right.
And now it's like he's at the same spot as Cal Poly was in 2004 when they just missed the playoffs. But luckily, they still had a lot of holdovers on that team to get them in 2005. And then they made some noise, even with, a redshirt freshman quarterback. Now, you know, you have some veterans out there.
Now is the year
to make a move.
You have a veteran. You have a senior middle linebacker. You have a senior quarterback. You have a senior slot, or, you know, the wing back that Deontay is. Now is the time to do it. I mean, you have seniors at key positions that you won't have next year, even if you have similar talent. And that's debatable. Mm-hmm. Coming in.
Yeah.
It's a
monumental game for the program and for the head coach. So.
Yeah, it's a big one. Saturday. You can follow it on Big Sky TV. If you Google that, it's for free. It's pretty good usually. Brian Milne, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
All right, we'll catch you next time. Again, Fansmanship Podcast on fansmanship.com.
Peace.
The piece is always good.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue.